Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Traina. Thanks so much for tuning in. Two guests on this episode, we have Andrew Marchand, New York Post sports media reporter and columnist, to go through a slew of sports media stories, everything from baseball and Turner signing an extension for big money in the middle of baseball and the owners fighting about money. Get into the ESPN 30 for 30s, Long Gone Summer, and Lance Armstrong. Trey Wingo and his status at ESPN, how the networks will handle kneeling this year, number two NFL Fox broadcast team, and a bunch of other topics with Andrew. And then after that, Arash Markazi from the LA Times joins the podcast to talk about the reopening of Vegas. Arash was like the number one reporter in Vegas when it reopened 2 weeks ago. And he gives us all the details from what the casinos were like, the tables, the pool, the sports book. So if you're into Vegas, as I know many of you are, like to do those trips out there, especially for the tournament, the NFL. Arash tells you what that situation is like. Before we get to the two guests, let me just tell you, if you missed any past episodes of the SI Media Podcast, please dip into the archives and check them out. Last week, Nate Burleson from Good Morning Football and CBS Sports was on, and he was phenomenal. Great conversation about race and what the past, two, three, 4 weeks has been like here in America and the change that's taking place. Nate was great on that topic. 2 weeks ago, Aaron Andrews was on. 3 weeks ago, Andrew Perloff from the Dan Patrick Show, Peter Schrager, Ian Eagle, Chris Long, all recent guests as well. All right. So yeah, check those out, download and subscribe to the podcast, please. All right. Let's get to this week's show with Andrew Marchand of the New York Post and Arash Markazi of the LA Times. All right. Joining me now, SI Media Podcast regular, New York Post sports media columnist, reporter, writer, Andrew Marchand. Andrew, how's it going?
I'm doing fine. How you doing?
Doing well. I think this is your second appearance since the quarantine started, so it's good to check in and actually do some sports media stuff. There's been a lot of things going on, it seems like, in the last couple of weeks in sports media, as hopefully we get closer to more sports coming back.
Yeah, it's starting to pick up, and like you said, hopefully, baseball is a little tricky situation right now, but seems like basketball's probably going to come back. We've got some soccer, football potentially in the fall, but like everything right now, who knows?
Your last column, I think it was your last column, you interviewed some sideline reporters. I had Aaron Andrews on a few weeks ago, and we discussed how that role changes if there's no fans in the stands. I think it's an interesting topic. I enjoyed your article on it. It's kind of like one of those weird things, because you would think a sideline reporter with no fans in the stands, Corona going on, could really do some interesting things. And the role as sort of newsbreaker is important there. But again, who knows what these telecasts look like, because there's even, you know, Kevin Harlan said they're going to call games from a studio. So well, let me start with this. If you have games called by play-by-play and analysts in a studio, do you think they'd bother with a sideline reporter?
Yeah, I actually think that's where the interesting aspect really comes into it, that like you could have Harlan and Marv, Ian Eagle, Brian Anderson from Turner all calling the games from a studio in Atlanta. And then in Orlando, you could have sideline reporters there doing their job on site. So I guess, you know, when you look at it in the hierarchy, the play-by-play person and the analyst have always been higher, and they still are, but the sideline person might have the inside track to be at events. Now, I talked to Michelle Tafoya, you know, by the NFL season. I'd also spoken with Al Michaels. You know, they seem to think that they will be at the events, and if there is baseball, I do think the home team announcers will likely be at the events. Here's the thing about it. It's not going to be a one size fits all type of situation. You look at CBS with the golf, they had two course reporters, but their analysts were not on site. Jim Nantz was on site. And then Fox in their second NASCAR, broadcast, they added a second pit reporter. So it's going to be different for each, sport, but I do think there is saw it happen with the XFL and no fans. Try to bring fans closer, viewers closer to the game. I do think you could see some expansion potentially of what sideline reporters do.
It's crazy because, you know, we're in this time now where, you know, the baseball players and owners are sort of battling over every cent and dollar, or how, you know, how much they're going to lose, how much they're going to get cut, this prorated. And it doesn't, and sports media has been hit hard, but in terms of broadcasters, it doesn't seem like, you know, you would think as a, just as a cost cutting measure, a lot of these networks might not use sideline reporters. Now, I guess if they have contracts, then, you know, you can't cut people, but it is interesting that it doesn't seem like the sports broadcasting, in terms of play-by-play and analysts, not talking about talking heads or stuff like that, they have not, you know, been hit by cuts. I guess, is that because they have contracts? Is that the simple answer?
Yeah, I mean, you know, mostly that's the contracts. I do think that if you look at a place like Sinclair, which owns a majority of the regional sports networks, you know, they only offered $2,500 loans to their people, which someone told me it came out to $28 a day. So it has hit play-by-play and analysts for those regional sports networks. Some others have been much more generous, and a lot of them have contracts that that are shaped differently. So they were paid, some weren't. But in terms of it hitting the industry and pay and all that, yeah, I think that will be, in some respects, forthcoming. And people still get paid. But you know, Disney, for example, and ESPN, are only going to open the wallet sometimes, and not that it's not true entirely, but they will use the pandemic as well to, you know, in negotiations. So you will see that going forward as well.
Yeah. I was shocked to read, not to, to plug one of your competitors, but I was shocked to read Bob Raisman in the New York Daily News, I think had it over the weekend, that I found this very interesting. Locally here in New York, Michael Kay does a radio show for ESPN Radio, and he said ESPN Radio cut his salary during the pandemic. Kay, who also does all of the Yankee games on YES, has not had his pay cut at all by the YES network, even though there hasn't been one Yankee game. And I think Raisman reported that all YES network Yankee announcers have been paid in full with no game so far, which is fascinating when you consider the Yankees cut minor leaguers who are making like, what, $400 a week or something like that?
Well, two things. With ESPN, if you're making more than $500,000, you were asked to accept a 15% pay cut for 3 months. So I think Kay said yes to that. Really comparing what the Yankees did with their minor leaguers, the YES being paid is not really apples to apples. I mean, they're kind of separate entities. But it's a credit to YES, if that's true. If they paid everyone in full, then, I think anybody who's treated their employees the right way, understanding the circumstances, I just think it shows kind of the fabric of the company. Now, that might be, some people naive, there's different circumstances where you literally can't pay people because you don't have the money. But some of these companies that, like a YES or all these cable networks, you know, SNY had much more substantial cuts here in New York, or the Mets network, but they're still getting their cable fees. They're still getting paid, right. You know, a lot of their a portion of their revenue every month. So to answer your overall question, I do think it will have an impact, but maybe not as much in the interim.
And then in the middle of all this madness with baseball, you broke a story over the weekend. I think it was Friday. You broke it about Turner re-upping with Major League Baseball. They do one of the series in the playoffs, while Fox does the other league, and Turner will be paying Major League Baseball a significant amount more money for this contract. I'm just curious, before we get into that, was anyone at Major League Baseball, did you hear from anyone at Major League Baseball that was unhappy with the timing of your breaking news report? Because that did not help the owners.
I mean, I always talk to everybody when I do stories. So I did talk with people, but I mean, it was true. So I don't know. You know, I don't know what they could be mad about. I mean, yeah, is the timing really good? No, but it was accurate. So, they had already done a deal with Fox for, you know, I think a 38 to 40% increase. And now they added Turner, and, you know, ESPN probably won't be far behind. So, when you look at it, yeah, I mean, I don't know if it wasn't really good timing for the owners, but they were doing the deal. So, you know what I mean? Like they know what they were doing. It's not like they were in the dark of what was going on. But publicly, obviously, it probably was stronger for the player's case, because if you have, it's near $500 million a year when this contract's extended in 2022, when you have that type of money coming in and then you're saying, well, we're not gonna be able to pay players, it just doesn't look good.
So try to help me and the listeners understand something a little bit, because all we hear about is, you know, baseball is dying, baseball has no young fans, et cetera, et cetera. And then the TV money comes in and it's always there. And I'm curious, you know, I get it with ESPN and Fox. I'm just curious on the Turner Sports angle of getting into bed with Major League Baseball. You know, like you said, $500 million for, I don't know, what is it, maybe 14, 15, 20 playoff games, and then a weekly game during the week that not one person in the country watches. So, like, what's the motivation there for Turner? Just to add to the NBA portfolio, become more of a, you know, they have soccer, I guess, with Bleacher, and, you know, become more of this sports property. But it goes against everything what people say about baseball and the future of baseball and the business of baseball. So why does Turner fork over so much cash?
Well, number one, the cable fees that obviously we all know about, cord cutting and people who never started with cable, but still at the end of the day, it's still a very nice business to have people paying you. I don't know what exactly everyone pays per month to Turner, but I'm sure it's a good amount. And when you add it into, if they're in, I don't know many, but let's just say they're in 70 to 90 million homes, somewhere in that range, I would presume, per month, that adds up to a lot. So I think when you do the math, if you have premium products like baseball is, you know, irregardless of it getting older and whatever. And let me just say something, because I tweeted something yesterday. So I think that's kind of, and you tweeted at me about, I said that, that baseball basically should be careful because the MLS, the 2 hour, watching Netflix life experience, no commercials, and the in-game experience at arenas is really excellent. And the NBA might go to December through August, you know, which would be right against baseball. So I said, you know, MLB, are you really sure you want to do this? Cancel your season. And it's not that people are who are old time baseball fans are going to start watching soccer. But there are kids who now have grown up with the MLS, who know about all the leagues around the world, and you're just giving them another entry ramp to really get their attention when you're sitting out over money, especially. And again, I like baseball, and I've been one to say it's proponent. I can make a huge argument about how successful it is on TV. I don't understand why they haven't really explained it by minutes watched. How many minutes do Americans watch baseball as compared to football? I mean, I've never done that math, but I would imagine it's much more, considering there's 162 games compared to 17 now, 16 it used to be. So I think baseball has a positive story and is growing. But I think in this situation, I think they're making everyone knows this, they're making a major mistake in terms of the growth of the sport, people getting interested, and allowing others to get in the door and being like, oh, this is kind of a good experience. And it's not every day. In soccer, for example, it's 2 hours. I don't have to invest as much time. So I think there's a few things in that. But baseball is still very important and at the fabric of sports, and still obviously a major, major sport. And I think it's a more of a success story. I think right now it's just a major era public relations wise. And if you have a fringe fan and just the commitment that baseball takes, I think it just doesn't make sense to me in the long run in terms of if it's all about money, in terms of where the money will go.
You said like 50 things there I disagree with and maybe three that I agree with. Listen, no one's going to say this is a good look for Major League Baseball. This is a horrible look for Major League Baseball. There's no doubt about it. I don't, the opening up avenues for other sports. I mean, I've heard for about 20 years about how MLS was going to become a thing in this country. Still hasn't. I don't think baseball not being around is going to help the MLS. That's just my opinion. We can agree to disagree on that. The other thing is this.
Wait, I want to agree. I don't want to do it. The NFL first off has been around for 20 years. And the idea, I know, I agree with you. I like soccer a lot. I'm a big soccer guy. But the MLS is part of it. I mean, MLS is, it's an okay league. It's not like it's some amazing league. It's the in-game experience and the idea that soccer, in terms of fanhood, is now has a real audience of people who actually played it in large part, and also who are growing up in it. So it's different because baseball is like an heirloom that's passed on from generations. And when you take a year out of that, I'm not saying baseball is going to be like ruined. Nobody's going to like baseball. Of course, people are going to go back eventually. But that fringe fan, you're taking a chance. You're taking a little bit of a gamble by saying, you know what, we're just going to not play for 18 months when it's over money during a pandemic. I mean, that's an issue.
All right. Well, when you say soccer, like, yes, soccer has a level of popularity. Within that, there's the MLS, which just does not. It's like football. You could say football, the NFL is the king, but, you know, at the end of the XFL there before it shut down, there were like, less, you know, a million people watching the games. It's not. So you said MLS. I don't think the MLS is going to have some boon because baseball's not around. That's all I'm trying. I don't think they're going to be flocking to the soccer games across America in the MLS because there's no baseball.
I'll leave it at this. But I think you're missing. I'm not saying old time Yankee fans going to say, all right, let's go watch NYFC when they have no interest
kids,
in soccer.
The kids. And I've been hearing about the kids in soccer for 20 years. I got it.
Go
I
to know, a game. Kids. Have you been to a game?
It's not about going to the game. It's about the MLS. Their popularity is not going to change because there's no baseball. Okay. So it's not going to happen.
All right.
Yeah, maybe a couple more people check out a game, but I mean, that's not going to do anything for the sport in the long run. And here's my thing about baseball. Because everyone wants to say that the damage that's being done right now is going to be severe. This is just my opinion. I could be 100% wrong, but this is how I feel. Opening day 2021, everyone will be there like nothing happened. Because here's the thing. People are angry right now. And part of the anger is because of the pandemic and corona. When that is hopefully, God willing, in the rearview mirror by next April, people are going to be grateful to have opening day. They're going to be grateful to have the sport back. Right now, everyone's life is completely on June 16th, 2020. Our lives are completely different from how they're going to be on April, whatever opening day is, 2021. We're in this mind.
Please, I've seen so many. I hope you're right.
The amount of people who are tweeting about their anger at Major League Baseball don't even watch the sport. They just see people fighting during a pandemic and they're pissed off. And I understand that. But the reaction is so over the top because these people don't even watch the game, number one. And number two, what's the point of a 50-game season anyway? Like, shut it down at this point. What is the point of 50 games? I mean, I get the point for Fox and ESPN.
They should play 70.
Well, right, but where we're at now, it's going to be 50.
Yeah, it's stupid.
Right. They were like, what is the point? Like, it makes no
point?
Sense.
I mean, I don't know. If you like baseball, I think there's a point.
If the Yankees played 50 games, I'd sit there and I'd watch all 50. But if they won the World Series,
you'd be happy about it.
That's not a real World Series championship.
That's for you and Chris Russo to discuss, you know, endlessly about. Like, nobody really, you enjoy the game. I mean, like, again, what does it even mean? It's not a real. It doesn't count. Like, you won't say
no,
the World Champion.
No, if you play a 50 game regular season, your title does not count if you win the World Series. Sorry.
Okay, I disagree. But of course, it counts. They're going to celebrate just like they won the World Series any other year. They're not going to be like Aaron Judge is not going to go. I don't really feel like we won.
Right, they'll play it like it. Yeah, they'll play it like it counts. But in my head, it doesn't count. So that's all. Right, it's just about my head and nothing else.
Yeah, it doesn't mean anything.
I mean, 50 games out of 162. I mean, I don't get it.
162 is way too many anyway. So there you go. 52 is too little.
No,
they should play like 140 games.
The beauty of baseball is that it's just always there in the summer. Like, whenever you need it, it's there. That's why 162 is good.
Yeah, I covered it too long, but that could be part of the equation.
Yeah, you're coming at it from a weird standpoint there, of covering the Yankees for all those years. I don't know. I again, I think it's very easy for someone to get on Twitter and say they'll never watch baseball again, but I don't buy it for a second. Because baseball is, they've done a lot of bad things in the past. I mean, this is, you know, like to get outraged over this. Yeah, you're outraged because there's a pandemic, you're thirsty for some. And listen, I want the sports to come back simply because of jobs. You know, we know,
yes,
I know so many people.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. That's what,
yes,
right.
100%.
That's the biggest factor in all this. I want the, you know, if they have fans in the stands, you want the people there who are selling the peanuts and the beer to get their money. We know people who, you know, you mentioned SNY, you want those people back to work. You want newspaper writers back to work. I get it from that standpoint. But the theory that, you know, America has been devastated because there's no baseball. And I saw a tweet from someone about like, how can you call yourself the national pastime? You've disappointed America. First of all, relax. Second of all, football's the national pastime. And, you know, let's not like go crazy here because there might not be a baseball, 50-game baseball season. We'll all survive. We'll all be fine. But
well,
again,
yeah.
I want it back for people.
People are like, you know, they're turning off.
Yeah. But I want it back for people to get their jobs back. I mean, that's what's important.
Yes,
I think,
exactly. That's another factor. That's a big factor.
Yeah. Speaking of baseball, you did not watch Long Gone Summer, the 30 for 30 on ESPN yet?
I was a no on that one. I watched all the Jordan, watched Lance, watched Bruce Lee.
I didn't watch Lance. What did you think of Lance?
Lance, I thought was the best one.
Better than Last Dance?
Yes.
Really?
It was really, yes. Yeah, that was very good. It showed, like, you know, when you're writing something or saying something, you really want to show, not tell. And I thought it did a great job of that because Lance Armstrong, very complicated guy, but you got the sense of what a jerk he is and was, but what a competitor he was and how important he was to the sport. And I thought it just gave a really good, much more journalistic view of everything, but entertaining in the same light. The Last Dance was entertainment. I mean, it wasn't really, you know, there was a little journalism in it, but it wasn't journalism at all. I mean, Jordan was one of the producers and NBA is one of the producers. I mean, come on, give me a break. So you're just like missing out. Like, for example, you know, they went into everything and all of Dennis Rodman's personal life, like Michael Jordan, we didn't know one thing about it. Like, again, I'm not saying I wanted that, but I'm just saying if you're doing an expose, and the idea that it was shooting down like any conspiracies about gambling, this, that, and the other thing, maybe those things are true, maybe they're not, but like that documentary wasn't going to find the truth. So to act as if it would, if it had found out like, you know, some, that the gambling, you know, secret suspension was true, it's hard to believe. And the people who said it were the commissioner, the NBA's lead PR person, Jordan's biographer, and maybe Jordan, I think, might have been the fourth one. So it's not exactly like they did like an expose. So I thought that, but Lance was good. Bruce Lee was all right. I thought it was pretty good. And so I skipped Sosa and McGuire. I saw your tweet.
It was really bad. and I've never seen a bad 30 for 30. That's what was so shocking about it. But this was really, really bad. I wish you would have watched it so we could discuss it. That what's interesting to me about
give me the top reason it was bad.
Well, it was an hour and 45 minutes of home run highlights, and then the last 15 minutes were steroids. The document, it opens up with like 5 minutes on like a memorabilia collector. Nobody cares. And the most shocking thing to me was they interviewed Sosa, asked him about steroids again in the last 15 minutes after an hour and 15 minutes of home run highlights. And by the way, when they started the steroid segment in the last 15 minutes, they started it with Bonds and put it all on Bonds. And then we're like, oh, well, you know, it was all Bonds' fault. Bonds did it. Now we got to ask these guys about it. They asked Sosa about steroids because he's never admitted it, unlike McGuire. Sosa got defiant and said, I don't understand why everyone wants me to admit to steroids when everyone was doing it. And the producer or whoever it was asking him the questions off camera never followed up by saying, because you hit 66 home runs one year. They just let him go. So it was a lot, you know, I was tweeting about how bad it was. And the responses I kept getting from people on Twitter who hit the nail on the head more eloquently than I could kept saying, like, There's just nothing of depth here. They didn't go in depth on anything. It was just all they didn't get into anything. It was an hour and 45 minutes of this is how they went back and forth hitting home runs every day during the 98 season. And then the last 15 minutes, it was like, well, Bonds did steroids, and then it got to Maguire and Sosa and the end.
All right, glad I missed it.
I had people like, you know, I have to say, this is a shocking thing for Twitter, but like 95% of the people agreed with me. And then the 5% were like, oh, it was a fun look back at 98. Oh, it was so fun watching those home runs. Oh, nostalgia. So, but there's nothing there. If you're looking, there's not, you don't learn one thing. Not one.
Yeah, that's the thing. You want to learn something. Well, that's the other thing about Lance. Obviously I know about Lance Armstrong. I knew some things. I didn't know necessarily all the nitty gritty, which makes it much more interesting. So there's always that perspective. I think if you were someone who was into cycling, Lance wouldn't be.
And even the talking heads on the one were weird. You know, a lot of Chip Carey, a lot of local St. Louis guys. No Joe Buck, who basically called the record breaking home runs, because I guess either Fox doesn't let him on or ESPN doesn't let him on. Who knows? You know which one of them is pulling that string? Because you know Joe.
I think they let him do it. Joe Buck.
Yeah, so it was
enough for you to tell them I want to do that.
Yeah, it was strange. It was really weird. What's going on? You've reported a lot lately about ESPN Radio. There's two things going on. So ESPN, several people have, I guess, left, not had contracts renewed during the pandemic, and now there's talk of like an ESPN Radio shakeup. Now I don't know. We're in New York. Nobody in New York listens to, what is it, Wingo and Golic in the morning? Yeah. Nationally, I'm not sure what the status is there, but from what you've reported, it sounds like a shakeup could happen there soon.
Yeah, I mean, Keyshawn Johnson could be on that morning show for sure. I think Max Kellerman may be a possibility. Not maybe, he's a possibility, but I'm not sure that'll happen. So they'll change that up. You know, Max could maybe do later in the day because I think he wants to stay on First Take, which is, you know, obviously very important to ESPN, and TV is kind of the driver. So could he do both? Yes, that's a long day. I know people aren't going to be able to relate, especially now, but get up at 4 in the morning, do 6 to 10 on radio and 10 to 12 on TV. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, Max will make a lot of money, but I don't know. It's a tough life. So could he do 1 to 3 on radio? I think that's possible. Max does 1 to 3 on radio. And, you know, Mike Greenberg also is in there. So what happens to Trey Wingo and the Golics? That's a good question. Will Cain's leaving. So the afternoon slot's open. So yeah, like it could be. And they've thought about, you know, moving Lebatard out of the 10 to 1 slot. I don't know if that will happen now, but it's definitely been discussed many times up in Bristol.
Obviously, this would be pure speculation on your part, but I'm just curious because, like I said, the ESPN radio thing in New York, it's not a huge factor nationally. Maybe it is. I think the bigger factor here is what would ESPN do for an NFL draft host if Trey Wingo wasn't part of ESPN?
I mean, I think there's a lot of people we could go with. You know, Sam Ponder does Countdown. Susie Colbert does Monday Countdown. They're going to bring in Laura Rutledge over to NFL Live. So I think any of those three women could get the job. Steve Levy is a great host. He is the front runner to be the play-by-play guy on Monday Night Football. I could see maybe using Levy in that slot. So I think they have a lot of people they could go with if Trey was part of the ESPN team.
Do you think there's any chance at all they'd bring Berman back if that gig was open?
Back.
Just for that gig. Just for that gig. Nothing else.
I mean, the first round, I don't know. Listen, they have brought Chris back for a variety of things. I tend to doubt it, but it's not – I don't think it's impossible. If you had him just for round one, he definitely would not do – I don't think he was doing it at the end. You know, that's when Trey would take over the second day. But, yeah, maybe it's not the worst idea, but I think ESPN kind of has to get away from that. I think that's a crutch to go back to Berman to, you know, for that nostalgia thing. I think you kind of have to develop your next generation of stars. And if you just keep going to that well at the old timers day, I just think it's not great for what you're trying to present. It's too backward looking instead of forward thinking. So not a terrible idea, maybe one that I could see being on the table, but I haven't heard it as of yet because, he could still stay in some capacity.
I'll take not a terrible idea. I'll take that.
That's like a B+.
I don't want to get into a whole kneeling thing because it is what it is at this point. Everyone has their opinion on it, but I'm curious from this standpoint. You know, one of the things that has sort of flown under the radar, I think, in all this is that, and I've written this twice now. Oh, I wrote a column and I did it on Twitter. You know, one thing people forget, NFL regular season, 1 o'clock, 4:15 every Sunday, Fox, CBS, they don't show the national anthem. Now, players are going to kneel this year. They'll go back to showing it. Do you think that will go on the whole season? You think it's like, let's do it for the first week, maybe the second week, and then get back to normal and make our monies with the commercials that we show during the national anthem? Or do you think they have to show it every single week because it's going to go on every single week now?
I think you could, there's a chance they might not show it, but then come back and show a clip. I think that's possible.
They're
going to do their commercial inventory. The first week, I think they would show it. For sure. And I think the NFL used to make before the Kaepernick kneeling and the issue that was created, that wasn't the real issue, but with the flag, you know, years ago, they did show the national anthem throughout the networks on opening day, not the rest of the year. And so, It will be a thing the whole year. You know, it obviously, I mean, a lot's also dependent on what's going on in the country and, you know, is there a feeling of reform and things are going the right direction? And, you know, not that things are going to go that quickly for something that's been going on for, you know, centuries. It's not going to be, you know, all better, of course, so quickly, but I do think there will be a mood in the country, but to answer your question, yeah, I think you'll see some form of it probably weekly, if that is indeed what happens.
If they're going to show the anthem every single week and the players kneeling, that is what's going to get certain people enraged because they wouldn't have even known about it beforehand. But then you get the visual. I'm not saying they should or shouldn't. I'm just saying, you know, most of, you know, Trump, MAGA, Fox News, they're only going to go after it if, you know, the networks are showing it, but that's a whole other issue.
I think I do think there's I get it. Like, look, with any subject, there are going to be certain segment of people who get mad no matter what, even if the facts don't. But I do think there's a greater understanding overall of what kneeling by Colin Kaepernick during I understood it then personally, but I understood it, you know, that it could be understood now than it was then. Now people kind of understand it, what he was trying to do in terms of a peaceful protest to try to make change. So in that regard, you would think maybe there'd be less, you'd hope there'd be less, enraged and more understanding. Maybe some could still disagree in terms of not standing for a flag, but not be enraged, understand it instead of
there's an election going on. This is going to be made an issue of, and there will be rage. You can guarantee it. Last one before I let you go, any news on a number two announcer for the Fox NFL crew to partner up with Kevin Burkhardt? That opening still exists.
Yeah, they're going to wait on Greg Olsen. And so for this year, depending on what happens with college, if there's no college, then I could see, or like limited college, you know, they don't have as many packages, Fox, you know, in Fox Sports. And they have a Big Ten and they have a Pac-10. Let's say one of those, I mean, the Big Ten, I think, would most likely play, but let's say the Pac-10 doesn't play. Then maybe I could see a Brock Ewart moving over. or even a Joel Klatt, possibly more likely Ewart if there's college, and if there's no college, then maybe Klatt. And then if they don't do that and they, those, the college teams stay, then I think, you'll probably get somebody like, Mark Slareth or Daryl Moose Johnson or,
the third that's person, not
maybe
good.
Spielman. Yeah.
Not
so that
good.
For a year.
Not good. Burkhart. Oof. Oof. Poor Burkhart. Not good. Not good at all. If that's the answer. Oof. I mean, those are good, legitimate games. That's oof. That's rough. That is rough. I got to dip into the well.
You're tough, number one. Number two is, though, I think what Fox is doing makes sense, though, because I think the one thing sometimes places do is they'll rush instead of, wait for the right person that you want, even if you have to kind of do a gap here. So I think those are possibilities.
I just thought of this, and I guess I should ask you. When the Breeze thing happened, I actually had people come to me and say, do you think NBC cuts ties with him? There was even talk at SI, someone wanted me to write something maybe about it, and I said this is the stupidest thing because he's not getting this gig for another year, and there's so much time that's going to pass. Was there even a second where maybe NBC considered cutting ties with Breeze, or was that not? Do you know if that was ever on the table or not on the table?
Yeah, I made calls in terms of see where the temperature was. No, I don't think that was ever in question. And I think, I don't think it's probably not over for him completely, but I do think that, he went at President Trump. And so I think that will, for lack of a better term, help him in terms of, what was becoming an issue, especially I think, and this is where he'd be in trouble with his fellow players. So if he was looked at as a total outcast. And the other thing is when he comes to NBC, he's going to do Notre Dame football first and then he's an NFL studio. And so it's not like he's on the games. And even though that studio show is very watched, it's the most watched one. It doesn't feel as, at least to me, it's at the end of the day. I don't know. It's like the personalities get lost. There's a lot of highlights. And so I just don't know if there would be as much of a focus. And I think, look, in this day and age, anything that's been made political, you're not going to please everybody. But I do think that he's quieted enough where I think he'll be fine. And, especially goes out, throws for 40 TDs, and he might even play another year after that. So it's like it could be two right. years away from him retiring, even though most people think this will be his last year.
Exactly, yep. All right. That covers it all. I appreciate you coming on and doing some sports media stuff. It's good to have this stuff to talk about.
Well, hey, that's a big guest lately, Jimmy.
Yeah, the guests have been good lately. And
I'm a downgrade.
No. We always gotta have a sports media conversation at least once a month. Get it in there and mix it up with the guests. I'll tell you, it's hard. It's just. The one thing from doing this from home is that it's kind of limiting. And like the guests, as I'm recording this on some computer program. So whoever's the guest has to be on a computer, not a phone or iPad. And that sort of limits, how can I say this nice? Let's say maybe some of the older technologically challenged people sort of eliminates them as guests, unfortunately. But we'll see what we can do about that.
Who's the one guest you wanted to have on and you couldn't have on because you didn't think they could handle the technology?
Dog.
I think you'd answer that. Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, I don't.
People understand that the thing that you use, you have to be on a laptop or a computer,
right?
And you have to press one button,
right? I don't know if Chris Mad Dog Russo can handle that. We're gonna find out because I'm gonna try to get him on. We'll see. He has young kids. You'd think they'd be able to help him out with it?
Yeah, they're not even young anymore. They're like teenagers.
Right.
Teenagers
even better. College, right. So they, right. So they should be able to.
I got a computer. That's a terrible situation.
Yeah, it's like, do I want to go through that disaster? Because I go through it with my dad. I know what it's like, so it's not pleasant. But luckily, you know how to use a computer, and you came on with no problem. So I appreciate
it. All right, sounds good, man.
Take it easy. All right, thank you. All right, joining me now, old colleague and friend, now at the LA Times as a sports columnist, and he did the. I don't know if it was the first, but I think it was the first. The first official reporting from a reopened Las Vegas, Arash Markazi. Arash, How are you?
I'm good, Jimmy.
I have to say, you're one of the people, now I'm thinking about it, that the quarantine must not have been fun for you, considering you're in a different state every day, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, it was really hard because we were about to go into this phase of the playoffs. You had the Lakers and the Clippers, and this was going to be a fun season for them. And then the Dodgers. I mean, you just had so much happening during that time. So, listen, I think it's been hard for a lot of people, but in Los Angeles sports in particular, we were about to go into a really fun time.
Yeah, the Lakers especially. We're going to, I think, have a big run there where, LeBron, whether he's with the Heat, the Cavs, the Lakers, there's really nothing like those, June nights, LeBron, in the playoffs, sort of everyone watching together. It's always that I miss, I must say.
And then, the big thing for us in Los Angeles, I mean, we have not experienced one of those June nights in 10 years. And so this right. was a feeling that after a long kind of period of really bad basketball and not making the playoffs and having a top five pick, that finally this was a championship contending team. And as soon as that last weekend of the season, they beat the Bucks, they beat the Clippers. It seems right. They're finally getting ready for this stretch run going into the playoffs. And then we got the COVID-19 pandemic.
We're going to talk about Vegas. That's what Arash is on to do, is give us sort of set the scene for us from what Vegas was like. But I'm just thinking of this as you're on, because you are out there in LA. I'm here in New York, and Pac-10 football, Pac-12, whatever it is, USC, UCLA. I mean, they're just complete non-factors here in New York. But I am curious, because with COVID, it does seem like college football, all the attention right now is on MLB, NFL, and college football, at least here, maybe because it's, again, I'm in New York, so there's this sort of bias here, but college football is sort of flying under the radar. In my head, I think the biggest mess with college football is every state is just completely different when it comes to the COVID. What's the vibe there in California? Do you think Pac-12 starts on time? Do you think fans in the stands? Do you think no season? Well, give me, just before we get to Vegas, give me a little synopsis.
So the unique thing about that, as you touched on, is a school by school basis. So USC will be allowing students back on campus in the fall. That, again, that is the plan. The UC system, which includes UCLA, is saying it'll be a online class situation. So what you can't have, and what college football will have to somehow deal with this, is you can't have players returning to a campus if they're saying that it's not safe for the students to return to campus. So my guess is they're going to try to figure out a way to have a college football season, but that's the struggle there, where USC is saying kids can return to campus, but UCLA is saying that they can't.
Bizarre.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
That's, by the way, that is a great word to describe this time period that we're in right now. Just bizarre.
Yeah, everything. Well, speaking of bizarre, so Arash hit Sin City when it reopened a couple of weeks ago, and was really the reporter of the number one reporter reporting on the opening of Vegas for basically everyone. And you posted some great pictures. I put them in Train of Thoughts. Now, my takeaway from your pictures of Vegas reopening was just, it looks so depressing to me. But when you were there, what's the vibe when you're there?
So here's the thing, depending on what hotel and casino you went to, it could be depressing, because the important thing to note is that only half the strip is back up again. So if you go to...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, I'm trying to think. The Wynn was open, Caesars was open, Bellagio, Cosmo.
So that other end of the strip with MGM and Tropicana and New York, that's closed still?
No, they're open. So I'm trying to think of the closed properties would be Paris, the Mandalay Bay, Haria, Vidara, Mirage.
Now, why is that? Why are only half open?
I think what they want to see is who's going to come out, right? Who's the guy... Because that guy included me, but I was there for work. Who's the guy who's standing outside the casino door at Thursday at 10 a.m. awaiting us to open the door for the first time? Because it was amazing the response I got. And I don't know if it was 50-50, but I mean, there was half of the people were saying, oh, that's amazing. Like, I'd love to go back. And then obviously there was half, if not more, to be honest, that were saying, oh my God, like, why are they doing that? Like, we're not past this. We're going to get a second wave. And so, so the most surprising thing to me was this, and this really touches on your point of like, I was providing like a glimpse into Las Vegas. It was a very mundane video in terms of if this was 2019, no one would have cared about this. But I did a 2-minute video of me walking through the casino floor Friday night at the Cosmo. And what made it unique, or at least unique during this time, was that it felt like it was shot last year. No one was wearing a mask. No one was keeping 6 feet apart. It just was like everyone was having a really good time. And so I think the Cosmo of all of the properties felt the most normal. And when I say normal, like there's no pandemic in the in terms of what these people think and hear. And in the story that I wrote, I was at one of the tables and a girl turns to her friend and says, why is he wearing a mask? And I was like, wow, like she like either she never cared about this, or maybe she did care at one point in time and then she stopped caring. But like the Cosmo floor, I was maybe one of the only non-employees that had a mask on.
Wow. But were there postings, signs throughout the casino saying to wear a mask?
Yeah. So there were signs posted encouraging you to wear a mask. Not only were they encouraging you to wear a mask, if you didn't have a mask, they had one for you. They could provide one for you. So they had masks, they had gloves, they had everything that you would want or need, but it's not a state requirement. So, for example, in California, if I were to go into a store, I have to wear a mask. Now, in Nevada, that's not the case. And so all you can do is encourage people, provide it for them. But then at the end of the day, if they don't want to wear it, they don't have to. And so the weird thing was is that what's happening right now is you're exposing employees and people who work there to a really tough work environment, you know? And so I think that's what you're going to see. And so I hope there's not a there probably will be a second wave, but I hope for the sake of the employees and the people who work there, because they've really had a tough, I hope they don't have to close down the casinos again. But I mean, it just, if people are coming from around the country and not wearing a mask, because again, these are people probably, Jimmy, who don't think that COVID is a big deal, right? Like if you're in Vegas and you're gambling and you're at the pool party and you're having a good time, listen, there's a certain segment of the population who think it's not a big deal, or you know that it's you know that like if they get it, it's like the flu. So that's what I kind of saw, right? So I'm walking the casino floor, and I'm like, this is the segment of the population who don't think it's a big deal, but unfortunately for the people who work there and who live in Las Vegas, they're required to wear a mask, but they're serving people who are not wearing one.
Right. See, what's depressing about what you're telling me is that, you know, listen, anywhere you go, you're going to have that person who, you know, thinks they're a tough guy and doesn't want to wear the mask. But from what you're telling me, it was the overwhelming majority of people, which, you know, and that puts the casino in such a tough spot because, you know, they're desperate for business. They're not going to start fighting with people and throwing them out if they're not wearing masks, if no one's wearing a mask. And then now you're putting all these people at risk. And
because here's the other tough thing. And when you look at different places now that require you to wear one, is that if you're drinking or you're smoking, you're not going to wear a mask. So a lot of these people are saying, I mean, A, they're not required to. But if you were to require them to wear it, I think they would just always have a drink in their hand or always have a smoke in their mouth and kind of say, hey, listen, like I'll wear it if I'm not drinking or smoking. But the fact of the matter is that the person would probably always try to hold a drink and be in a position. So again, you know, if you are the type of person who is not going to leave your house unless you absolutely have to, you're not going to Las Vegas, right? So I just posted a poll. I'm like, would you feel comfortable going to Las Vegas? Over 60% of people said that they're not. And so
right.
you know, again, like we've seen these people on social media, the people who are, when I say flocking, they're not flocking yet. Again, there's no traffic in Vegas. The traffic is within the casinos because there's not that many that are currently hoping. But if you're in Vegas right now during the pandemic, there's a good chance you don't think that COVID is that big of a deal.
Right, right. So let me ask you this. When you went into a casino to the tables, was it a situation were any tables filled at all with, you know, five, you know, whether it's blackjack, usually it's five or six people there, craps table, you could get, you know, a bunch of people there. Were tables ever filled at any point?
So the Cosmo really truly felt like it was pre-pandemic. I'll just explain. At the Bellagio, there's a plexiglass divider between the players and the dealer. And not only that, they are only three per table.
I don't want to cut you off, but I just want to be clear. Is that only at the Bellagio? Like the other casinos don't have
The MGM. So at the MGM Grand, New York, and Bellagio. So I guess that's the other tough thing, that this is not a – if there is a statewide law, it didn't seem like – it went to all the properties. Because I'm using the Cosmo as the example. Like they had no plexiglass there.
Right, because I'm a dummy. So I saw your pictures and I just assumed every casino on the strip had the plexiglass. I didn't realize it was a casino basis. Okay. Wow, so like, what a disaster.
The Bellagio and the Cosmo are right next to each other. So there's a good chance if you went to the Bellagio, you're going to walk to the Cosmo. If you went to the Cosmo, you're going to walk to the Bellagio.
Right.
So compare the pictures that I took of the Bellagio where there's like a divider and things like that. And then you walk to the Cosmo and it's none of that. And here's another thing. If you go to the roulette table at the MGM properties, they require you to wear a facial covering because there's no a plexiglass divider there. Now, right. That is not the case of the Cosmo. So that is the biggest issue that I think a lot of people have had. And so, and I really think that's a state thing. I think the Cosmo is, they're trying to basically keep it as normal as they possibly can with staying within the guidelines.
Yeah.
And if the state's going to say, we're not going to require you to do this and we're not going to require you to do that, They're just not. And the other thing that was really surprising is the pools. There's not the pool party, the crazy pool parties that you've seen before, but right. The day beds were sold out. The cabanas were sold out. Like, it was as close to a pool party as you're going to see.
See, I feel like, again, you know, one of the dicey things about this corona is, you know, nobody knows anything. It's all a mess. There's no leadership with it. So everyone sort of is forming their own opinions, which is how we get into this mess. I mean, I'm of the opinion, and again, I think it's so different state to state, but I think if you're outside, you know, I don't think you have as much to worry about as if you're inside. Like to me, when I hear you, see, I think you say pool party. To me, there's a couple things there. One, it's outside. And two, you can easily stay 6 to 10 feet away from people if you're outside at a pool. You know, you could go into a little corner at the pool or go on your lounge chair and say, what I think about though, no plexiglass inside at a roulette or craps table, which get packed with people breathing on you while they're putting their chips on the tables. That terrifies me.
Yeah. And that's that was my biggest concern with playing, is that I think that they tried to do as good of a job as they could in terms of cleaning the chips and cards and bringing out a new deck and things like that. But you're not going to do that like every time someone touches the chips. Right. And so that'll be interesting.
So, yeah. So everything in terms of playing the games with the chips, that was you hand them the cash and they give you the chips. Now, tell me though, like, when people were there, okay, let's say craps table, you know, someone comes out and they hit the point number, they roll the eight and the table cheers and goes crazy. Was that happening?
Yeah.
So people were into it when they were playing. And then I can't imagine the sports book must have just been so.
Well, so the issue with the sports book was just like there was no live sports, but the sports book was back up again. You could place a bet on the future. You could place a bet on certain things that were happening. But yeah, the problem with the sports book is just like there wasn't a ton of live sports, so there wasn't a ton of people there.
Right, right. The thing about the placing the futures bet, though, I mean, like, I don't understand why anyone would place a futures bet when there's a pretty good chance that you're going to have interrupted seasons or not see, you know, you're playing with fire there, in my opinion. I mean, you know, you can even have a situation, let's say the NFL, you know, let's say something happens as a second wave, maybe they only play a 14 game regular season. Then what happens to your over on, you know, that's a rough
one. I think people just wanted to place a bet, right? But like, I totally agree. Like, I mean, you could place a bet and obviously things are not going to go or the season's not going to happen. Combat sports during that first weekend did return. So that was sort of like my sports component with UFC, Top Rank. So they're putting on fights, no crowd, obviously, but the media can go cover, which I did.
Right. Would you go to Vegas for pleasure, not for work, anytime in the next 3 to 4 months if the opportunity presented itself? Like, if let's say a hotel has called you up, say, Arash, come for a weekend, no work, just hang out, gamble, pool, whatever, would you go?
You know what? I probably would, but it would be during the week. I don't think I'm going to go back there on a weekend because what I found, because I was there the entire week, I got there on Thursday and I left on Thursday. You can socially distance during the week there. I was wearing a mask. I had my hand sanitizer. And so I think you can have a relatively good time there, Sunday to Thursday kind of a thing. But I mean, I got to be honest, when I was there during the weekend, and I believe that's going to be the case on 4th of July weekend, because that weekend – the entire strip should be good at that point. They're going to open up the Mandalay Bay, Paris, Link, you know, like all the hotels and casinos they're anticipating will be back up by that weekend. That's the kind of time period that I don't want to be there, where it's a packed strip, packed right. casinos. Again, that's what they're hoping. It may not be packed.
And the restaurants, I assume if the casinos are open, the restaurants are open for like sit-down meals indoors.
They are, but you know, a lot of them are taking turns. So, like for example, Carpetta at the Cosmo, they were open, I think, four nights out of the week, and like so, you know, there's like adjusted days and times, but they were like open. You like everyone was wearing a mask. You had to be 6 feet apart and things like that.
So, in the restaurant, the people were wearing masks then.
Well, so here's the thing. You walk in, you wear a mask. Again, you're not required to. They like, but then Jimmy, like even in Los Angeles now, I can walk in and I wear a mask. And as soon as I sit down, I take it off. Why? Because I'm going to have food and drink and things like that.
Yeah. See, where I am, we're just hit phase two. So like they just, last week, they opened the outdoor seating. So you have to wear a mask to your table. And then when you get to the table, you take the mask off. Is that where you are in California?
Exactly. And you know, and the thing about that with flying now, that's the same thing. Cause if you have drink service or food service, so I have to wear the mask coming on. But as soon as I sit down and I have a drink, I take it off. So like there's like you said, there's so many things about this that we don't know. And it's like, okay, I can wear a mask when I come onto the plane, but as soon as I have like my drink and food, like I take it off.
Yeah. Do they have in the in Vegas at the restaurants that are open, do they have the tables, you know, 6-10 feet apart or whatever it
is? 6 feet apart, but you know, I mean, there's no one there saying like, I mean, it looked like they were 6 feet apart.
Yeah. Right. Wow. It's so sad that this is what's happened to Vegas, but it also sounds like it's a complete free for all. So like, you know,
well, because the other thing about Vegas is like there's no way to truly know the infection rate in Vegas, because what we have seen, by the way, we have seen a spike in Las Vegas. That's just if you live in Vegas. So that doesn't count for if you're from California or if you're from Phoenix or if you're from somewhere and you drive to Vegas or fly to Vegas and then you come back home. Like that will be counted towards the state that you live in. So you know, I am very curious to see how this all plays out just for the sake of Las Vegas and the sake of the people who work there. I hope it works out. But, you know, if no one's going to wear a mask and if no one's going to socially distance and if the weekend crowds, especially going into July 4th, look as crowded as it was, that was concerning.
Yeah, like from what you're telling me, my assumption would be opening Sunday of the NFL season, September 5th or whatever that Sunday is, 1 o'clock Eastern, 10 o'clock Vegas time. the sports book is going to be packed with people not wearing masks who are not 6 feet apart.
Yeah. And listen, at that point, it's like up to the state. If the state of Nevada is really concerned about that, you require people to wear a mask. But then, so the question at that point is, are people going to not come to Vegas because they have to wear the mask? And then at right. what point is it, because we've seen this happen around the country, you're going to have people showing up who don't want to wear a mask, and you're putting the security in a tough spot where there's like, there's going to be like, you know, a, not a fight, but, you know, the guy doesn't want to wear a mask and he's refusing to leave and things right. like that.
Well, that's what I'm thinking here. I'm, you know, I don't want to make light of it, but I'm actually being dead serious. Like on a Sunday afternoon, you're going to have a guy in a sports book who's going to be losing money on games, on NFL games he bet. He's going to be drinking and he's going to throw off the mask and start screaming and yelling about his, you know, his rights are being infringed upon and he's not wearing a mask and blah, blah, blah. You know, I mean, you know, it's coming. There's no doubt about it.
But, you know, that was the interesting thing that I just like observed from Las Vegas. I mean, if you're descending upon Vegas, if you're going to Vegas right now, you probably have that mindset of like, I'm not wearing a mask. Like, I don't think it's a big deal. And so right. that is their clientele. What it'll be interesting is like, how big of a percentage is that clientele large enough to sustain that city and the hotels and casinos?
That's interesting. Great yeah. question. Yeah, it's a great question, but yeah, it makes sense. Yep. All right. I appreciate you giving me a little recap of Sin City because, you know, I don't know when I'm going to go back, but, you know, the sports book there was so fun. It's amazing.
And by the way, Jimmy, this was like their year to shine. They had the NFL, the Las Vegas Raiders, the NFL right. draft was supposed to be there. Like, right. So again, I'm kind of bummed for that town because it is a great sports town, but it will be back soon. It's just a very weird time over there right now.
Yeah. Yeah. If I had any place in America that, you know, where this would be weird, Vegas is, you know, right there. So, all right. Well, stay safe and thanks for coming on and be healthy and well. And we'll talk soon.
All right. See ya.
Take care. All right. My thanks to Andrew Marchand of the New York Post and Arash Markazi of the LA Times. Good podcast. Appreciate them coming on. If you missed any recent episodes, they're in the archives. Check them out. Download, rate, review, and please subscribe. Nate Burleson from Good Morning Football and CBS Sports was on last week. Phenomenal interview there with Nate, but not an interview, it was a conversation, and Nate was phenomenal. Aaron Andrews 2 weeks ago, Andrew Perloff from the Dan Patrick Show 3 weeks ago, Peter Schrager, Ian Eagle, Chris Long, all recent guests. So check those out if you haven't. Give us a rating and a review, it helps tremendously, and of course subscribe. All right, that wraps up this edition of the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. We'll see you next week. Take care.